This is Fresh Air, and you're listening to WUHY-FM in Philadelphia. The time now is 12 minutes after 3 o'clock. Coming up on Fresh Air, Ralph Flood reports on two demonstrations held in Center City today.
The current economic squeeze and the current cloud of military brinkmanship is bringing people out into the streets again to voice their concern. On the east side of City Hall at noon today, representatives of a whole spectrum of social agencies and political action groups joined to protest the Carter administration's 1978-79-80 budget proposal. The $531 billion budget would increase military expenditures by $10.8 billion, or 10%, and cut domestic services by approximately 3%. Jerry Stahl of the Philadelphia Council of Neighborhood Organizations cited one cut that he felt would really hurt the city's neighborhoods.
One particular thing is the Summer Youth Jobs Program. This is part of CETA for Summer Youth Jobs, which he's recommending be cut in half, exactly in half, instead of being increased. It's a program that...
Not war, money for peace, not war, money for peace, not war. So,
it's a program that a number of neighborhood organizations in Philadelphia have run summer programs where they hire youth to be counselors and get paid for that, and also to provide recreation and other opportunities for the younger children in the neighborhood during the summer. There hasn't been enough money to go around and begin to meet the needs for that in the past. I think we had 12,000 youth employed last summer, so it would bring it down probably to 6,000, which is really a drop in the bucket considering the enormous rate of unemployment among youth, especially minority youth in the neighborhoods of the city.
Bill Conrad from the South Philadelphia Conference of Human Services explained his concern for that area of the city, what the Carter budget cuts would mean for South Philadelphia.
Is it's a massive increase in expenditures for the military and a massive decrease in expenses for human services. And what I mean by human services, I mean health care, employment programs, environmental protection for clean water, clean air, nurses training, food stamps, and for school lunch programs. It's something that affects people no matter where they live, in the city or the suburbs or small towns, but especially people in the cities. Because the cities are having a difficult time already. The military is getting richer, and the cities are getting poorer and falling to pieces.
If the current programs were continued, the budget would be $16 billion more than it is, just continuing the current programs. But that represents only a 3% cut. Can you really call that a disaster?
Yes, a 3% cut is a real disaster.
Well, what specifically? I mean, there are increases for housing subsidies for the poor, for Medicaid, for most of the programs that affect the very poor.
How can you call a 3% something other than a disaster when inflation is going up the way it is now and the problems that we have in the cities? Okay. The way we analyze the situation, obviously the president has his axe to grind, and we're here to tell you that what our priority is for jobs and human needs coming first.
Have you heard much from the people in South Philadelphia whom your agencies serve about the budget?
To be honest with you, we haven't heard much because most people really don't know what's happening yet. The press is just beginning to start talking about it, and I think we're seeing the beginning of something that's going to be a long battle, a long, long battle. So to be honest, most people really don't know what's happening yet, and the cutting is going to come later on and the agony is going to come later on.
Michael Marchino is the project director of the Sane Education Fund of Philadelphia. With Michael, I raised the same question, that is whether a 3% budget cut is really a disaster, and whether the military increase might not, in fact, be justified. Michael Marchino.
The Carter budget represents actually only about a 3% cut above or from what the budget would have been if current programs had been continued. It's tight, times are tight, but is that a disaster?
It is a big disaster. The reason it's a big disaster is because of the current status of the overall economy and because Mr. Carter has consistently gone back on his claims to, in the future, cut back on defense spending. In his 1977 inaugural address, he said that we would begin to move that year in 1977 to reduce the Pentagon budget and to reduce the number of nuclear weapons. He has done exactly the opposite. poor people in this country are suffering and laboring under a higher unemployment rate. The inflation rate is eating into the small amount of money that working people do get now. And so that's why it's such a big disaster.
Well, then it's the trend that you're primarily objecting to, the trend continuing of increasing military spending and decreasing human service spending?
Exactly, exactly.
About this this military budget, it's a $10 billion increase. It includes the cruise missiles and so forth. Carter maintains that this was a promise extracted by NATO allies, and he still foresees a SALT agreement. Do you have any views on his optimism about a SALT agreement and his commitments to NATO?
Well, I think he might be right about the SALT agreement. He's privy to information that we are not, so we can't tell what's going to be in the SALT agreement. We don't know what kind of agreement it's going to be. I think to use the justification for the production of the cruise missile that he's made a commitment to NATO allies is a very, very weak one, because in the past, American presidents have made plenty of commitments to NATO allies or said things to their NATO allies that they didn't fulfill. And America's defense, while every president since Roosevelt on has hinged it, or from Truman on, has hinged it on our NATO allies, does not depend upon producing items for European governments or because European governments want us to. And it can clearly be shown that the cruise missile is an unnecessary defense item, that in fact it's provocative. It's very provocative to the Soviets because it threatens their land-based missile system. So relating that to the SALT agreement, who knows how they're going to come out on the SALT agreement regards to the cruise missile, but I think that it would be very difficult to argue that the cruise missile is necessary for our defense.
Can it be fairly argued, though, that the constant Soviet military buildup does present a somewhat different challenge now from the past, that there really is a realistic worry about Soviet activity around the world at this point?
Well, stating that it's a realistic worry, I think, is very, very debatable. There has been clearly an increase in Soviet military spending and deployment of troops and whatever, but to construe that as a threat is a whole other matter. The United States is going to have to adjust now to a situation that we haven't dealt with in the past, and that is that we're not going to be the lone superpower or the lone policeman of the world. The Soviet Union is reaching a state of parity with us. It's a matter of whether the Congress, the defense planners, and the people in this country who set defense policy are going to be able to cope with the fact that the Soviet Union is a first-rate military power. Now, it's a whole nother leap, I think, logical leap, to state that they are a military threat, that they are invading into areas of the world that they had not gone before. There is little or no evidence for this kind of thing when you examine each case on a case-by-case basis.
But isn't that parity justification then for increasing spending to maintain the parity?
Absolutely not. I don't think that there's anyone in the national security defense establishment at this point who would state, in all honesty, that the Soviet Union has surpassed us, or we are in danger of being surpassed in some particular aspect of our military technology. Several ex-CIA directors, several ex-members of the National Security Council have stated in interviews, newspaper, television, that in fact, to state that the Soviet Union is surpassing us is sheer nonsense and fabrication, that the United States retains an incredible amount of superiority, especially in sophisticated technology, miniaturization of components for missiles and this kind of thing. And the accuracy of our missiles is still much greater than the Soviets. It also gets down to a point of how much accuracy is really needed. How many times do we need to be able to hit the Soviets with these very accurate missiles? It's like arguing about the number of angels on a pinhead. We know that regardless of how accurate Soviet missiles are now or how accurate American missiles are now, if we hit the Soviets first or if they hit us first, each of us has the capability to retaliate in such a way as to make that first attack unthinkable. And so to debate the superiority of one technology over the other on very fine points doesn't really make any sense.
Over on the other side of City Hall, in Center Square, a large number of retail clerks and other union people turned out in front of the First Pennsylvania Bank at the same time today, at noon, to show their support for the food fair employees and to put pressure on First Pennsylvania to get other creditors to have more patience with food fair chain until they could pay their debts. Wendell Young, president of the Retail Clerks Union, had accused First Pennsylvania of using its pressure the other way, that is, to get the creditors to call in their chips and close down food fair. John Bunting, chairman of First Pennsylvania, has denied the accusation, called it a distortion. Both of these men were in New York today for the creditors' meeting.